Hello, this is Angela Ewing with KCIW Curry Coast Community Radio. Storytime. 9 o'clock Horses, Episode 18. Joseph Levine was a caring man to everyone in his world. He was very funny with silly expressions and jokes. Everyone loved him. He often drove me home if it was late or if the weather was bad. I found walking several blocks home alone at night rather frightening, so I welcomed his offers of a ride home. He was always such a gentleman. I never had a moment of fear that he might try to get overly amorous with me. He didn't even give me a kiss on my cheek. He was just a friend. What bothered me was the fact that during the next 6 months, I thought about Joseph a lot, even when I was at work during the day. I looked forward to my evenings at the drugstore, but reprimanded myself for the thoughts that sprang unwelcome to my mind about being with him. It was obvious my resolve to stay a single woman for the rest of my life was weakening. I found myself talking to Joseph about everything. He was a good listener and seemed eager to please me. One evening, as he was driving me home, he asked if I would like to accompany him to shul on Friday evening. "What's that?" I asked. "It's our Jewish church. We call it shul." "Oh," I said, "well, I'm not religious in any way." I had given little thought to going to church ever again since the situation when I was 16, when the Baptist minister had told me I was a sinner. I certainly hadn't envisaged going to any church ever again. I didn't know any Jewish people, although it suddenly occurred to me that my mother would ask me to take something, apples or another kind of vegetable, to the Jewish lady who lived on the corner. Why label her? I wondered now. Why not say to the Christian lady who lived next door? Religion and race never crept into our family. Any conversation at all. Everyone around us was the same. Although it's true, I had never seen or met a black person until the 8th Air Force came from America to set up Nissen huts on our park opposite the house during World War II. I was reluctant to go to the shul with Joseph, but because he had asked me, and I wanted to be with him, I said yes. It was fascinating to meet the people there. I noticed Joseph's parents watched me closely from a few rows back as he showed me how to read the prayer book from right to left. He had explained that his parents were Orthodox, but they liked the rabbi at this shul, which was Reform. I didn't ask what the difference was. After the service, Joseph excused himself to go to the restroom. I stood in the foyer checking out the congregation as they left. Joseph's parents approached me. His mother smiled and touched my arm. "You like my son," she said. "I can see that. But I'm telling you now, so you won't be disappointed he's engaged to be married." I said, "Well, I hope Joseph will tell me that himself." His father said, "No, it's not up to him who he goes out with." When they walked away, I was stunned. I didn't know what they were talking about, but I could see it was an interesting scenario. When Joseph took my arm and we went outside, I told him what his parents had said and asked him if it was true about his engagement. He was furious. "Don't take any notice, please," he said. He explained that the Jewish girl they were talking about was just a friend. Nothing more. "Oh," I said, "well, seems you need to explain that to your folks because they were serious." "They're just old-fashioned," he said. "Think no more about it. They really, really can't rule my life. I am over 21. The Jewish service had fascinated me. I went to the library and checked out a book on Judaism. I thought that the Jewish teachings were interesting, although rather complicated with the rituals and traditions associated with it. As time went on, I was becoming more attracted to Joseph. I did enjoy his jokes. He really did make me laugh. He made me happy. I did compare the physical appearance of Joseph with Colin, who was strong and muscular. There was a softness about Joseph's body that made me suspect that as a child, he was probably plump. This man never wore casual clothing, always white shirts and black pants. Even when I got to know him better, I realized he didn't like t-shirts or jeans. His family were obviously very formal, even in their day-to-day lives, almost to the point of being rigid about everything, it seemed to me. And yet, he seemed relaxed in his own skin, confident and capable. He told me stories about his childhood and his early experiences as a pharmacist, the funny situations he'd experienced in college. Since I had started to work at 15, I never thought about college. I never knew what I'd missed, I suppose. After a few months, our relationship began to grow into more than just business acquaintances. Sometimes we just sat in his lovely red Cadillac with a black top and listened to Moon River and other songs of that era. We kissed a lot, although it never went much further than that. He took me to all the Italian restaurants in Brooklyn, and there were many. He would not go into a German restaurant, ever. I understood why. When Colin's mother wrote, I was reminded on how old she was and how sad she must still be. There lay the guilt. Colin would always be a bright spark in my memory, but like a photograph that eventually fades, the colours of our togetherness were blurred, the colours muted. Joseph was alive. He was with me now. He came to Netta's house a lot, and we escaped to my bedroom. I did catch her once or twice, giving me a look that conveyed disapproval. But I wasn't a teenager any longer, and I felt it was my own business anyway. However, sadly, it seemed my happiness with Joseph was to be short-lived. Unbeknownst to me, he had told his parents he was going to marry me. That didn't sit well with them, not at all. One evening, his mother came to Netta's house. She had made it her business to find out everything about me, where I worked, where I lived, how long I'd been in the U.S. She was clear when she said to me as she stood at the front door, "So what do you want with my son? Please leave him alone. He'll be married to Esther before too long, you understand? Nothing against you, but we don't allow non-Jews in our family. I hope you'll honor my request and do the right thing." I was shocked to hear words like that. Was it an arranged marriage? How could parents dictate who their son would marry? I didn't understand, but I certainly didn't want to cause problems for Joseph. I closed the door after I watched her walk away. I knew what I had to do. I didn't answer the phone the next day or the next, knowing it was Joseph. On Monday evening, after work, I went to the drugstore as usual. He came to me right away and took me in his arms, despite the customers in the store. "I called you over the weekend. You didn't call back. Are you all right?" "Come outside for a minute," I said, "please." "What is it?" "Joseph, your mother made it clear to me that I was to leave you alone, and that's what I'm doing. So please, let's not see each other anymore. You have Esther, I understand. A nice Jewish girl, your mother said." Joseph shook his head. "What bullshit. I've known Esther since I was a kid. She's not interested in me, and I'm not interested in her. My mother tries to run my life, but she can't tell me who I'm to marry." He held my face in his hands. "You and I will be married. In fact, we shall go away. We can be married anywhere, and my parents don't have to be around." And that's how it was. I was not going to tell him no. I gave 2 weeks' notice at work. Joseph had things arranged at the store, and on a Sunday evening, I was sitting watching television with Netta when there was a knock at the door. It was Joseph. "You ready?" he asked. "You bet I am," I said. Netta Basile cried when I told her I was leaving, but she gave me a long hug and wished me well. She shook Joseph's hand and told him sternly to look after me. "Capiche?" she added. Joseph had packed 3 suitcases in the Cadillac. I had one. His plan was to drive me to Rochester. At one time, he had been offered a job there, and he said it was a lovely place to live. I didn't care where we went, as long as we didn't have to stay in New York. We found a lovely guest house on the outskirts of Rochester. The window of the room overlooked a beautiful garden. and I immediately liked the owner of the house. Her name was Rose. The next day, Joseph and I went to the local temple to ask the rabbi if he performed interfaith marriages. No, he said he did not. Well, I said, why don't I become Jewish then? The rabbi looked askance. Oh, no. Conversion takes a long time. Lots of training and studies. It's an honor to be a Jew, you understand. Yes, well then, how can we be married? The rabbi said. I would think any registry office in Las Vegas would do it. I said, I bet a Christian church wouldn't turn away an interfaith marriage. Then you must do that, he said. Joseph could see I was getting upset. Come on, he said. Let's have some fun for a while. We need a vacation. We can go to Niagara Falls if you like. It's magnificent. We spent an unforgettable week of sightseeing and a boat trip on the Maid of the Mist that ventured so close to the falls. Even in my travels in England and on the continent, I had never seen such an awesome sight as those falls. I liked Rochester. Joseph even suggested we should perhaps rent a house there. I liked that idea too, anywhere away from New York. It was 2 o'clock in the morning at the guest house when Joseph suddenly sat up in bed with a start. That's my car, he said. Someone's driving my car. I know the sound of that power steering. He leapt out of bed and moved quickly to the window. I followed just in time to see the brilliant red of taillights turning onto the street from the driveway. My God, Joseph, someone stole your car. Call the police. I was frantic. He sat down on the edge of the bed and held his head in his hands. Yeah, I will call the police, he said, but, you know, I know who it is. He looked at me and I could see tears in his eyes. Who, for God's sake, who? My dad. It was true. Half an hour later, the police called back. They had stopped the Cadillac and questioned Joseph's father, who told the police he was taking the car back from his son, who had taken it without his knowledge, but that he'd come back to the house to talk to us, and he did. The police followed, I suppose, to make sure his statement was true. When the police left the scene, the three of us stood at the bottom of the driveway in the stark light from the street lamp. Joseph held my hand. His father was leaning against the car. He looked at me and then at Joseph. He said firmly, Joseph, if you marry this girl, you will no longer be our son. What a terrible thing to say, I blurted out. Joseph stood close to me and gripped my hand tightly. His voice was almost a whisper. So be it, Dad, he said. So be it. Just let me have the car. His father opened the door of the car to step inside. Absolutely not, he said. You've been spoiled just like your sisters and you'll not have it. I'd sooner sell it. I gasped. The car was Joseph's pride and joy. Every time we pulled into a restaurant, he would park it where we could see it from the window. He carried a towel to wipe it down after it rained, no matter where we were. I knew he loved that car as much, if not more, than me. I was furious. You nasty man, I yelled. His father gave me a look that told me everything. Suddenly, I knew I had to put things right. I let go of Joseph's hand and looked up at him. I said sternly, you must go back to your family. I meant it. He stared at me, his eyes wide behind his thick glasses. For a moment, he said nothing. Then his brow tightened together in a frown I had never seen before. He said, so you don't want me either? His words were forced as though he could really not believe what I'd said. I whirled him around. Oh, no, that's not true and you know it. I just want you to be okay with your folks. I just want to do what's right for you. He said quietly, then we'll be together, you and me. That's what's right for me. He turned to his father, who was already in the car. Goodbye, Dad, he said. Give Mom my love. His father took off with a screech of tires, and Joseph stood looking as the car rounded a bend and was lost to sight. We went back to bed, and I slept with my arms around Joseph's big chest. When he rose and went to the bathroom in the early daylight hours, I noticed his pillow was wet. I heard the shower running and then his voice. "Today we'll go back to New York." When the bathroom door opened, he emerged with a towel wrapped around his middle. "We'll have to go by train," he said. "I have a cousin in California. We can stay with her. I'll borrow some money. I can borrow some money from Bernard Lieberman. He'll do that for me." Apparently Joseph had thought of everything during the night. But I knew in my heart at that moment that the sadness of the situation with his folks would haunt not just him, but me, forever. You've been listening to episode 18 of 9 O'Clock Horses. Tune in next week to episode 19. This is Angela Ewing with KCIW Curry Coast Community Radio. Thank you for listening.